We're standing on my front lawn, I suppose you'd call it, yeah. If you can call it that. It's a little bit rough and ready, but it
well,
is
you've
a lawn.
Got chickens hatching and yes. geese roaming around and a few little mounds here, which brings me to what Tamsin writes about, all the way from Tasmania. Hello, Tamsin. And it's another cold and windy day, she says here. Winter, of course. We're not in the least bit envious. Well, you get your fair share there, Tamsin, don't you? It occurred to me, though, she said, that I don't think I've ever heard you speak about moles. Is that because you don't have them there? And if not, what role do they play in the ecosystem? And what is filling that niche on the farm? Here, there are marsupial moles.
Oh, goodness. Moles that carry their young in a pouch, rather like a kangaroo or a wallaby, indeed. I've not come across that. We certainly haven't got anything like that here in the UK. But we do have genuine old moles here, and we have them all over the farm. If you go right back in history, the UK was mainly covered in woodland, in natural forest, and that's the proper home for moles. In the Middle Ages, they were called moldwarps, and we're beginning to wonder whether what farmers use to plough fields, a mould board, is a close sort of derivation of that, because a moldwarp is literally, if you translate it, it's a soil thrower. And that's what we're looking at right in front of us here. Three molehills, very fresh. There's still moist ground on the top of them. And all over this lawn, there's probably 100, or there was 100 or so molehills. You can see all little bare patches. But I collect the soil if we go up close to one, because it's always rather fine. I mow the grass, and all the clippings go back onto the ground, because the main food for moles is not chopped grass, it's the worms that feed on the organic matter in the soil. So this is high organic matter soil. It's been grass like this for well over 100 years. And so there's an incredible habitat. And this is about the area that a mole would need for its territory. They're very antisocial, unlike, is it Kenneth Graham's mole Wind in the Willows, was it, I think? Portrayed mole as a rather sort of amiable character, whereas moles are quite antisocial in real life.
And you talk about this area, so just tell us, how big is the lawn here?
The lawn is about 40 feet wide and 120 feet long, and that's about the right area. They really need about 300 or 400 square yards of grass to support one mole territory. And in the woodland, they probably don't need as much. Now, it's really difficult to understand about mole populations, because if you have a lot of mole hills, it might just be one mole suggesting there's not much food. But if you don't have many mole hills, it still might only be one mole, but there's ample food. Now, underneath us is a labyrinth of holes. If we just walk down the lawn a little bit, you can see where I've moved all the mole hills. One there, one coming up in front of us, another one there, one there, one there, one there, one there, and all the way down. There's well over 100.
If you were Alan Titchmarsh, you would not be happy with this, would you?
No, this is the problem, because if you're a proud garden keeper, they have a lot of pride, people do, in caring for their gardens, and to see something suddenly arise in the middle. I mean, I had a very ancient aunt, and she had a mole on her face, and it had hairs on the top of it. Aunt Lola. And it's like something appeared on something beautiful, which I can understand. And so people then start to poison them, trap them, or whatever. And in the past century, right in the early 1900s, people were still catching moles. Farm workers could earn more from catching and skinning moles and selling them for gentlemen's waistcoats or for ladies' coats, very posh ones.
Moleskin trousers.
Moleskin, well, modern moleskin's got nothing to do with moles. It's just a fine finish that's put on cotton and it feels really soft.
In fact, mole fur is very interesting material, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's very, very fine fur. The first thing surprising about moles is they're tiny, about 5 inches, maybe 6 in a large male, from tip of nose to tip of tail, so quite small, cylindrical, virtually don't have a neck. The head seems to join into the shoulders, and they have paddle feet. Now, I've got huge palm hands, but if you imagine I took the fingers off my hands, I've got a great square waddle of hand, and I replaced them with claws, and then I can actually swim in the soil, which is with a breaststroke, which is what moles do. So underneath us is perhaps 300-400 meters of mole channels, and the mole goes from one to the other. Although I've taken the tops off the hills, the little mole holes are still underneath the soil, and as the mole goes along, it picks up worms that are hanging in, bites them, it can make a larder with them, and then store them. So when the soil is dry like this, we've had nearly a month now without rain here at High Ash Farm, the worms that they feed on, that's their main diet. They will eat slugs and insects as well, anything that drops in that burrow. But when the worms hit dry weather, they go down a couple of metres, and that's deeper than a mole can burrow, and it's called aestivating, and that's a difficult time for moles, so sometimes they have to come up on top. But they live a pretty awful life. You're born in the dark, you spend your life in the dark underground, and you die in the dark. It's like a living coffin almost for them, so I do feel sorry for them. They've not got very good sight, but they've got incredibly sensitive noses and whiskers on as well, so they can detect really tiny movements. So interesting. So as I said, they're pretty antisocial, but during part of the year in February and March, the female might accept a male. He will leave his territory and run across the ground, find one of these runs, and if a female's in it and receptive, she'll become pregnant, and she'll give birth in April, May, but she'll have a special molehill that she makes, and it's a humongous mound. There was one just over here. You can see the remnants of it. That would cause Alan Titchmarsh to lose the rest of his hair, probably. And it's about 2 foot across, and it was best part of 2.5 foot tall. There was an awful lot of soil, but I left it to remind me, because I knew one day I'd cover moles, which I haven't done in all the podcasts that I've done. And that's called a fortress. And underneath there, the babies would be born at ground level, not underground, but there'd be a little grass nest in there. So it's quite vulnerable. Foxes can dig them out. And the baby moles are born blind, pink, no fur on them. And the mum only suckles them and looks after them. And her day is divided into four. So one human day is 4 mole days, if you like. So they have 8 hours at a time, really, 4 of which is digging, 4 of which is resting, because it's quite strenuous work. So yeah, it's between 3.5 and 4 of our days to 1 mole day. And so I absolutely love them. I don't do any control of them. And you can see my lawn, it's not too shameful, is it?
Oh, no.
Apart from all these scars on it where there's nothing
you
growing.
You keep it mowed.
Yes, I
do. That's why you have to flatten them out, I suppose.
That's why. Well, I will use a board sometimes and pull across, and I call it a mould board because, as I said, the ancient word for mole is mouldwarp or soil thrower. But really love them. But we go back not quite so far in history. We had, was it Kim Philby who betrayed M15? He was a mole, wasn't he? Because he kind of worked, he was like a spy. He worked underground, didn't he?
He was a Russian spy in MI5.
MI5, I call it M15 after motorways, yes. Sorry, I come from Norfolk, you see.
You'd have failed your spying test straight away.
I certainly would.
Yes, he was one of the 4 spies.
Yes,
Cambridge.
He was. But we've used that name for working underground, unseen, but still present for a modern-day spy. So there we are. And you can go back a little further in history. I think early 1700s in February, the 21st, one particular year, early in the 1700s, King William of Orange was riding his horse. The horse was called Sorrel, and it's on Hampton Court, and the horse tripped on a molehill, and he fell off. But he didn't kill himself, but he broke his clavicle, his collarbone. But the clavicle became infected, and 3 weeks later he died as a result of that little furry black mammal that's underneath here. A mole killed our king, William of Orange, that was, no less. So
don't underestimate the humble mole.
No, and enjoy having them, because it's an underground subterranean mammal. You don't see them very often. You might occasionally see a dead one. Foxes and cats will catch them and kill them, but often not eat them, which is surprising. So I haven't ever heard of anybody eating them, but years ago, as I said, you used to skin them and use the pelts. And a sign of a good gamekeeper, he would have a gibbet where you'd hang all your pests and everything that you caught that you didn't want on the farm or on the estate where shooting occurred. And remember, if you have molehills in the pasture, it would blunten the blades and cause all sorts of problems as well. And so a good gibbet would have 20, 30, 40 moles in there, and the gamekeeper would make his own little traps from a piece of willow bent over and a kind of snare put across the run. Although these are quite deep burrows here, moles will also dig just under the surface in poor soil or when it gets very dry, and they can go along at quite a rate. So there we are, a little bit of the history of the mole. So thank you, Tamsin, for that. I love sort of questions like that where I can link into what's here at the farm and go into a little bit of the history. And there's always lots more, so I could talk for ages on moles, but we've got to go to the top because I can hear the mower just starting up, and that's a really fresh molehill there.
Yes, the soil's dark, isn't it?
It's still damp. So just to prove how good it is, look, I'm just going to go down. Look at this, just pure velvet. It's heavy clay soil. You can see all the little root structures, look, in the soil that help to break it up. And if you notice around the edge of my fingers, the soil is in tiny little lumps. They're called crumbs, and that's a good crumb structure. And farmers have realised that, and they try to copy moles. So we have a special machine on most farms on heavy land and in the brecks as well, where the light sand is quite permeable there, and there's clay underneath it. And they'll use a machine called a mole drainer. And you pull that behind a tractor, and it's a very thin leg which goes through the soil, and at the bottom of the leg, which is about 3 feet long, you'll have what's called a soil expander, and that opens up a little slot which represents a mole run under the soil, and you back over a ditch to start it off and then drive away. Particularly effective on clay soils. It's a cheap form of drainage, and they're called mole drains, and that's what's underneath this lawn. And honestly, it's clay here, but it never has water laying on it. There we are. The benefit of having a mole. I stand by them.
I'm not a cat or a bat. I am a mole and I live in a hole.
Yes, I knew you'd come up with something droll like that. Well done.
Do you remember the song?
I do, yes.
I expect
yes.
You've got it in your record.
Yes, correct? Well, you say it with a very low voice. I'm a mole and I live in a hole.